Welcome to the Westminster Effects Doxology Podcast. We exist. I can never do this intro, dude. We exist for the glory of God and the tone of His people. You can join the discussion of the Westminster Effects Doxology Podcast Lounge on Facebook, and make sure you subscribe to all our socials. That's in the show notes. I'm Cody Fields, the president of Westminster Effects. Go buy stuff for your guitar at westminstereffects.com. As you can see, I'm not joined in person by Bradley Cox, pastor of Resurrection Church in Greer, South Carolina, nor am I joined via the interweb by Lutheran John, but in person at the vaunted Spartanburg Memorial Auditorium in front of their blueprints. I'm joined by one John Cooper. John, thanks for coming on the podcast, man.
Absolutely. What's up? Oh, yeah, it's not the best background in the entire world, but it's what we can do.
Isn't it, though?
Or maybe
this
it is.
This is pretty epic.
It is. Yes, it is. We are... No, I'm kidding. Great.
So, all right. First... How do your vocal cords survive doing all of these shows? For one, you're on tour, but also you do like a million interviews a day. How do you do that?
I tell you, that's
our icebreaker.
Yeah, that's the icebreaker. Because the last month, especially because the book released, I have been talking nonstop, and I've been thinking, I'm probably going to lose my voice at some point.
At some point, yeah.
And it hasn't. It's been kind of crazy. So I've told Corey, I'm like, I honestly think the Lord is just giving me energy, excitement, and health, because being on the road, a lot of times you're struggling with sickness anyway because you meet so many people. I mean, you're meeting several hundred people a night, and you're shaking hands, and you try to wash your hands and all that, but... Yeah. It's just the way it is, you're going to get sick. So God has given me such excitement about what we're talking about, the material. Yeah. And I just feel so pumped up about what the Lord is doing, my conversations. I just got done with we do a VIP every night where we meet fans. So I just literally got done with that, came straight up here to interview with you.
Yes, sir.
Somebody came through, and it's a mom and her daughter. Her daughter's autistic. And she said, my daughter's having trouble at school, bullying, because she's different. She's autistic, and she said that people were sending her notes. Why don't you just kill yourself? Why don't you just end your life? You're worthless. And she was struggling through it and discovered Skillet. And she said that it was our music that she would help communicate to her mom what she was feeling. It's our song Monster. She's like, that's what I feel like. And she was talking about how that music has helped her in her faith with the Lord. It's so unbelievable.
Yeah.
It's so awesome that I get so pumped up, and I just feel this like energized of the Holy Spirit.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know, that might sound a little to some people like, I don't know, too spiritual or something.
I'm a good frozen, chosen, reformed guy, and you're good. You're good.
I'm a good frozen chosen. I know that sometimes people go, okay, but I just feel that way.
You're barking up the right tree right now.
About what the Lord is doing.
Yeah, that's awesome. So I actually...
Of course, I might lose my voice tonight. I'll still be pumped up about what God's doing.
Yeah, exactly. So I kind of... That's such a good story. I kind of want to reverse what we had initially talked about. So you just released this book, Wimpy, Weak, and Woke. Kudos for the Oxford comma. So before the and. How Truth Can Save America from Utopian Destruction. So... Normally, in a rock band's existence, you do these VIPs and you get those stories of, Skillet saved my life. It was Monster or Hero or whatever. Or you hear something like, Comatose is my favorite album ever. Or personally, I'm more partial to Dominion because that's when I really started listening to Skillet, was, working with Seth and all that kind of stuff. Funny story of... when I was introduced to louder music in youth group, it was Reliant K, MXPX, and Zayo.
Yes,
sir. And Scott Mellinger is a Westminster artist. And all three bands that have apostatized, which we'll get to.
Wow.
Right? So Skillet really, that was still on, your industrial electronic phase.
Right.
And so you weren't really on my radar for the longest time. It's like, oh, whatever, it's hard rock. Right? Mm-hmm. And then I start working with Seth. It's like, wait a minute. Your tones are awesome. You got fun riffs. You got good songs. But you're used to VIP meet and greets, people wanting autographs. And now
Now you've written a page thick en- or a book thick enough to kill somebody. Right. And you're shattering people's hopes and dreams. Why are you so mean? Stuff right. like that. How has the band adjusted to that? Mm. That new dynamic that you normally don't have in a successful rock band.
Yeah, it was a shift. It happened over a few years. So I do think that right. like it was kind of gradually going there, and each time was a shift though, yeah. because it wasn't what we were planning on doing. You know, I wanted mm-hmm. to tell people just a very positive message, play music, tell people, God is real. Mm-hmm. Jesus loves you. Maybe you should just ponder the existence. Read the Bible. See if God starts, speaking to you through the word. If you start, do you right. start feeling like this is actually true? Try it for yourself. You know, very non-confrontational, which I still believe in, even though that's not what Skillet does now. I still like that. I think that mm-hmm. there's a great place for that. I think what happened was, things got so weird and so horrible and so terrible and so wicked that I was like, we might need to start saying some things about some of this. Mm. But I'll tell you what was the last nail in the coffin was the fact that I saw Christians and even my Christian music peers, Christian artists, mm-hmm. begin to speak out on the opposite side of right. what seemed to me to be orthodox.
The pro-alphabet agenda, the pro
yeah.
trans,
pro-BLM,
PLM, pro yeah, yeah, yeah.
CRT,
yeah.
pro-Marxism in some cases.
Yeah.
And some, I wouldn't say pro-abortion, but I would definitely say
it was at least softer if they said anything
about it at
all.
Definitely softer. You know, sometimes they call it pro-life womb to tomb. And what mm-hmm. what pro-life womb to tomb is their way to create a new category that is actually not fighting for pro-life causes.
It effectively turns into socialism.
Yes. Yeah. It's basically, yeah we're pro-life as long as we can be socialist. You know, it's really not good. And so I finally said, all right, we're going to say something. So it has affected the band. There is no question about that. Mm-hmm. And it has affected our listeners. Some people have never listened to you again, ever. And so
I've gotten that with some of the stuff that I've posted about. I actually had a liberal, quote-unquote, pastor tell me that he was either going to sell all my pedals that he had, and he had like three or four, actually, or he was going to remove all of the artwork so he wouldn't be putting my name out there. And I was like,
oh, wow.
It was pretty impressive, actually. And,
yeah.
And I think it was right around the time that you started speaking out more, too.
I think that that was just 2020s was such a, especially was such a hotbed.
Yeah.
It was just like, and I think really what happened was I think the church, I mean, my little culture analysis for whatever it's worth, I think the church did not speak about social issues, political issues. I would just say they did not really apply a biblical ethic to the world, to our lives
right.
on earth.
Right.
And so everybody was left to fend for themselves. And we all made assumptions. Mm-hmm. We all made assumptions. Well, that's what a Christian would be like. And somebody else was like, no, this is what a Christian would be like. And then 2020, it all hit the fan and everybody was shocked at someone else's position.
Right.
So anyway, all that to say, how do we handle it? I just really believe that today in the 2020s, to stand up for the name of Christ means to stand up for certain very unpopular positions. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's, if somebody said, well, why are they interconnected? There's a few reasons they're interconnected to my mind. Number one is we are called to stand for justice. You know,
right.
We're supposed to do that. And it's easy to look back and say, Christians really, they really didn't stand for justice during the abolition movement like they should have. You know, we have grace for those people. Who knows what I would have been like? I'm not being judgmental.
No, absolutely, yeah.
But I really wish they had of.
You have to put guys in their proper context. You know, people will rip on me for being reformed and, oh, well, Calvin killed Servetus. It's like, well, let's back up a little bit, you know?
Yeah, or you hear a lot of, you know, Jonathan Edwards, you know, his comments on slavery, which
or
he didn't
Whitfield,
have many.
Or, yeah.
Yeah, so you're like, well, you know, Edwards didn't really stay. You know, it's easy for us to do that now. I think what's hard is to say, what is my context? What is happening in my context that actually is like that?
Right.
And I think for Christians, if they want to look back and say, I would have stood against slavery. I would have stood with MLK, with Dr. King. I would have marched for civil rights. I would have. I'm like, you know what? If you're not standing against abortion, then you wouldn't have.
You wouldn't, yeah.
So I think that's part of it. And the last thing I'll say about this,
yeah.
I'm not really answering your question. You're saying, how do I deal with it? I'll answer that as well. But the other thing is that if you're going to have a lot of people say, if they're going to co-opt the name of Jesus for the opposite side of justice, like we're seeing, then I think to stand up for Jesus means to kind of be like, hey, I'm standing for Jesus, and I disagree with that. I think that what they're saying is actually injustice. I believe it's sin. I actually think that is not true Christianity. Right. So how do we deal with it now? I think we've just had to, that little part of you that said, I don't really want to make people mad. I just want to, tell them Jesus loves them. That part of you just has to kind of die and realize that's over with.
Yeah.
Those days are gone. We're in a new time. And I just deal with it and say, yeah, I just deal with it. I don't like making people mad. And I'm a very reasonable person. I am, because, you know, all the bands I tour with for 25 years, none of them believe like I believe.
Right.
And we're good friends. Right. We have meals together. My kids grew up on their touring together. So we're actually very inclusive and very tolerant. We're just open about what we believe the truth is.
Right, right. There's a parallel in my mind right now between Doug Wilson derangement syndrome and John Cooper derangement syndrome. You're not trying. Well, Wilson sometimes tries to irritate people.
He doesn't mind poking
the bear, but you've poked the bear simply by standing up for truth. Yes. Is really what I'm kind of seeing as the real impetus to write this book.
Yes.
So, I mean, first, I mean, let's define terms.
Yeah, that's always good.
Right. Wimpy, weak, and woke. Let's go backwards. A lot of times people say, well, you don't even know what critical race theory is. You don't even know what wokeness is. So do you know what that is?
No, I don't. I just like...
You only wrote 600 pages. I like
yelling about it. I'm like everybody else on the internet. I have no idea. It's like yelling at people.
Right.
It's ridiculous. Yeah. So a lot of people are very offended by the word woke.
Right.
Well, that's not what... And no matter how many times I tell people, I understand that it can be defined in different ways by different people.
Sure.
Here's how I define it. Here's how I mean it.
So you're telling people up front,
this is it.
Here's what I mean.
Yep. It's in the introductory chapter of the book.
Well, who has time to read that?
I know. It's crazy. People get so mad. And I'm like, if you read it and you say, well, that's not even what woke means. Well, then it's not about you. You know what I mean? Right. Then disregard it, bro.
You're so vain you thought this song was about you, right?
Is awesome. Yes, it's crazy. Wokeness is this. I do understand, of course, that when the term first started, you're talking about people that are saying, I'm aware of discrimination. I'm aware of the nature of discrimination.
Yep.
Very quickly, let's just move on. That's what they say. Well, it just means I'm aware of discrimination. Jesus says that we should be aware of discrimination. So, yeah, woke. Why is that really bad? What wokeness has become, some would argue it actually always was. It's just that not everybody knew what it meant.
Sure.
But that's fine. I don't even need to get into that. What it has become, in my view and how I define it, is a totalizing worldview that is PC culture on steroids. Mm-hmm. It is an obsession with social justice, not biblically defined social justice, a social justice ideology that makes everybody in the world oppressors or oppressed people. So it is a kind of a neo-Marxist way of looking at things. Mm-hmm. And the way you know who is oppressed is just if they are said to have power.
Right.
So they're a minority group or they're a powerless group.
The disparity of outcome argument.
The disparity of outcomes, you know, and the fact that, like, so women are the powerless. They're a minority. Even though they're not
technically a majority.
Technically a majority.
Let's not be bothered with facts.
They're a majority, but they're the minority. Well, why are they looked at as a minority? Because they are the powerless class. And so you do every single thing in life, and every week something new happens that proves this definition of woke. And I think that the Israel massacre on October 7th is the perfect example. Yeah. people were freaking out. How come college kids are praising Hamas in America?
Right.
And I'm like, how did you not know they would do that? That's the oppressor oppressed. Yeah. That's the way they see the world.
That's how they've been doing this for decades.
And they've been open about it.
Yeah.
So it is in, and I think what, when I talk about woke, it's, I think what Christians need to understand is that that woke worldview is a totalizing way of seeing everything in the world.
Mm-hmm.
That is a grand narrative. Sometimes the postmoderns call it a grand narrative, but that is a totalizing worldview that is at odds with Christianity.
Right.
They cannot coexist. You can't kind of put them together.
And you're not denying the fact that real oppression exists.
Of course.
You're not denying that at all, yeah. Right?
Yeah, in the first chapter I even write, I say, caring about the poor, hating racism, and trying to end disparities between groups is not being woke. That's what Christians do. We've been changed by Jesus. He changes our heart. He gives us a love for Christ begets a love for your fellow man. And you want to help people. You want to help their lives. You want right. to give to the poor. You see racism, you say, that's wrong. I got to speak against that. Mm-hmm. Just like we talked about abolition movement.
Yeah.
Just like we talk yeah. about the pro-life movement. Mm-hmm. We look at what's happening and you stand up for it. That's what we do because we've been changed. So I even say in the first chapter, that is not woke. That's what Christians do. And then I explain what it is, but it doesn't matter.
Right. So wimpy and weak.
Oh, yeah.
Those are pot shots, too.
Yeah.
Right. So go in on that.
Yeah. I mean, the funny thing is when I write in the introductory chapter, I don't even use the language of you are wimpy. Those people are wimpy. I use the language of we. It's a societal problem. It's right. in society. And it's in the church.
You're acknowledging that this has affected even yourself.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And I talk in the book about times that I've been wimpy. Mm-hmm. This is what made me wimpy and weak. I did this thing and it hurt people, but I thought I was being a good Christian.
Right.
But I actually hurt people. That is a wimpy way to understand the Bible. We are wimpy. We have become wimpy and weak. And so what I mean by that is this. Number one, wimpy. What is that? Wimpy is when you value tone and winsomeness over speaking the truth. Mm. I don't want to hurt people's feelings, so I just couldn't say it. That's not actually good. That's not the mm-hmm. model of the Lord Jesus Christ.
Right.
Imagine Jesus to the rich young ruler. You obeyed all the commandments? That's amazing. Really, I love to hear it. Maybe we can talk about it some more next time. Have you considered that maybe it could be the case that you like money more than you ought? I'm not saying you do. I'm saying, could it be the case?
Could it
that,
be, yeah.
Could, you know, Jesus is like,
I don't think Ezekiel 23 gets written this way.
Remind me what that is. I'm not spiritual enough to know.
Starts talking about all the donkeys.
All the donkeys? I don't remember.
Talking about Israel's whoredoms.
Oh yes. Whoredoms is the word I remembered.
Yeah.
That's even more shocking.
Just in case the kids are out there. So go back, cover their ears, replay.
Oh, of course. Right. Okay. Yes. Yeah. It was very detailed and
yes. It was detailed about certain
sizes and
equine
things like that.
Anatomy.
There you go. Anatomy.
Yeah.
It's basically a biological course.
Right.
It's basically biology if it was like this. It's like, you know, maps and
or Elijah with the prophets of Baal, hey, maybe your God's taking a dump.
Yeah, exactly.
That doesn't happen with wimpy.
Yeah. I it's so much of, I even wrote, I'm sorry to be so long-winded, but in my first book.
You get paid to do this. It's okay.
Yeah, exactly. In my first book, I even talked about the fact that, like, I'm admitting something that you're not supposed to admit, which was people kept saying when I was a kid, God is good. Jesus is loving. He wants all the children to come to him. And I remember when I started reading the Bible on my own mm-hmm. in, like, eighth, ninth grade. Have your quiet time. Mm. I would read these words of Jesus and I would think, I wouldn't dare tell anybody,
yep.
but I would be like, he doesn't sound near as nice as what other people are saying.
Right.
He doesn't sound that nice
kind,
to me.
But not nice.
Yeah.
All the time. Yeah.
At the time I'm like, I mean, he's like, oh my gosh, to his disciples. Like, when are you guys, how long will I have to be with you people who never get it? I remember reading that as in ninth grade thinking, gosh, he's not as patient as what I've been told, you know.
Yeah.
Anyway, the point is that Jesus loved people. He spoke the truth. How many times do we read that Jesus had compassion for people? He healed people.
Yeah.
And this is one of the things I think is actually worth mentioning is Jesus, sometimes he would see somebody sick, he was like, oh, he had compassion for them. And I think that's really important because sometimes we can sterilize healing as to the only reason it happens is to say that Jesus' words were true. But we read, he had compassion on people. Yep. This means that Jesus had more compassion on people than any of these people saying, lying about his niceness and his winsomeness. He loved people, but he was not afraid to tell the truth. And I think that we have downplayed that. I think we've let the culture seep into us. And I write stories in the book about myself doing this, and it's not good. And I thought I was being a good Christian by doing that, and you're not. You're hurting people. And what it means to be weak is that we are theologically weak, philosophically weak, because we want to try to find a way. We, quote unquote, love people so much. We want to find a way to make their false ideologies somewhat like baptized, almost like, yeah, you're right, Marx. I mean, we can agree that Karl Marx really did love the poor. We can really agree that he really did want to find a better way. But it's just that maybe that's blah, 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 and it's not true.
About a year ago, I read the book The Devil and Karl Marx.
Yeah, I quoted that book in mine.
Dude, that made my stomach turn. I've got a pretty high threshold for that.
Hated people.
Oh, my goodness. It was, if you want to know how bad Marx was, people, read The Devil and Karl Marx.
I have a section in my chapter 3 that begins with Karl Marx, and I have these, and I'm telling this story about in 2020, as all that, you're saying in 2020, all of a sudden, it's exploding, all Christians think like me, and we're all butting heads. I remember saying to a pastor, a friend of mine, I was like, I don't like that you are, he was doing sort of I just said, sort of like saying there are some parts of Marxism that we can, if we can meet people halfway, we can win them to Christ because Marx really did care. And I just said, Marxism is satanic. It's demonic. You can't meet it halfway. Yep. And he was very offended by me. Like he's like, you sound so, what did he say to me? You sound so extreme. And I write about that in chapter 3.
You mean how Marx was extreme.
Yeah, exactly. So I write about it in chapter 3. And so I say, well, let me ask you this. Does this sound extreme? And then I have quotes from Marx. Like you read the quote and you go, this guy hated God. This guy hates God more than you can imagine, and he hates people, and everyone around him. His own father wrote him a letter because Marx was a maniac, and he would stay up all night long raving and writing things and reading books and screaming and yelling. And his own father wrote him a letter saying, "You waste your nights." You waste your nights raving and giving birth to monsters.
Wow.
You squelching your talent. Is there any love in your heart for your fellow man? That's what his own dad said.
Yeah.
So I write it and I say, does that sound too extreme to you? This guy is demonic. So when I say weak, what I mean is, guys, you're playing with fire.
Right. If y'all can't tell, you know what you're talking about. You've actually done the research. Seth sent me a picture of the box of books that you read to ready for this, to write this book, a year and a half ago. And that was a big old hefty box of books.
Well, what's funny, I need to post it, but what's funny is that those were the books that I quoted in the book.
Okay. Yeah.
But go ahead.
Yeah. So, I mean, how many quotes do you have? You've got already Marx. I'm assuming you've got guys like Derrida and Rousseau and those kind of guys. So you've actually gone to the original sources.
Yes.
You're not just going to what Carl Truman or Rod Dreher said about these guys.
Yes, right. In which, those guys were
great
books too.
And they did fantastic work, yeah.
Yeah, there's 648 footnotes.
Let's go.
And I'm not an academic either, but the reason is because, as you kind of alluded to earlier when we first started, before I started yammering for ages, you had said something about, you don't even know what critical race theory is. It's because I would be in 2020, I was in these conversations and with a brother, with a brother in Christ who I believe does love God, but is just saying completely insane things, right? And I feel like they've kind of been brainwashed into this progressivism. And I would say to them, you got to understand that is coming from critical race theory, and it teaches whatever. And then my opponent would be like, dude, you're such a right-wing ideologue. Critical race theory, they're like critical, you don't even know what it is. Critical race theory is nothing more than a legal theory. They are not teaching this in schools. That is not what this is. You're just repeating what you heard on Fox News.
And you're just repeating what you heard on Rachel Maddow.
Yes. And I would be like, it's just so not true. But what I found was that no matter how many receipts I give to them, here's the book. Here's what it said. It's in the book. This is what they say.
Yeah.
It wouldn't matter.
Yeah. Yep.
It would not matter. And so I said, you know what? I'm going to get the OG quotes in my book so that the person like you and me, the person out there listening that's like us, that wants to be ready for these conversations when somebody's like, you don't even know what it is. You have the confidence to know, yeah, I do know what it says. I've read the original authors, even though there's a good chance your opponent's not going to believe you. Mm-hmm. What happens, I keep finding, is that a lot of these arguments are not in good faith.
Right.
They're not good faith arguments. They just want to win. Yep. And so they just say anything.
And I've been there before, not on the woke side, but just wanting to win somehow.
Like, of course, we all want to win.
Yeah.
We all want to win, but I found that they're not good faith. And if I bring the receipts and say, no, this is what it says, what say you, they'll just be like, you just don't get it, man. You know, they jump to the next argument, which funny enough, if anybody cares to get in this deep, I do write about it in the book. So Michel Foucault, who is the French postmodern, a lot of people don't know who Foucault is by name. But they have been influenced by him. Yeah. They know the ideas. He's the most quoted philosopher of the last century, which is crazy because people are like, Foucault? Who is this?
Yeah,
how do you the even most spell that? Quoted philosopher of the last century. And Foucault even says it. So he's postmodern. So for people that listening that don't know what that is, all it just basically means is this is a philosophy that either there is no such thing as absolute truth, or if there was absolute truth, we could never, ever know it. Therefore, we live as if nothing is true.
Right.
Is basically the idea. And so, because nothing is absolutely true, and he believes that everything in life is nothing more than oppressed and oppressor groups and power, because nothing is more than power, then he says that we need to rewrite history by fictioning the past.
Oh boy,
we need to fiction the past.
Know that. Oh, I've learned.
He actually just
today.
Says it. Yeah. He just says it out. Like if your opponent,
he said the quiet part out loud.
He said the quiet part out loud. Wow. If your opponent said 1619 project, how do you know it's not real? If I said because they're fictioning the past, people would argue. Mm-hmm. Foucault says, yeah, that's what we need to do.
That's what
because
trying to do.
Nobody could ever know the real history.
Right.
It could have happened. You don't know that it didn't happen.
Yeah.
So we create fictions and we create storylines. And he even says, we try multiple, he says it this way, we try multiple attacks, even if they are contradictory in themselves, it doesn't actually matter.
Wow.
Because the only thing that matters is winning over the oppressors.
Wow.
So if they're the oppressors, they are immoral. What they are doing is immoral. It is wrong. So how could you possibly say that lying about, well, you're not lying, fictioning the past, as he calls it. How can you say that's immoral when you're being oppressed and abused and tyrannized?
Yeah.
That's what he's getting at.
So some of the comments I've seen is, oh, God, you're just so political now. And stuff you've heard. What's the answer to all of this? Is it we just need to make America great again and elect a strong man or whatever? Right. Like, is that what you're going to point to?
Right. You know, it's funny, I recorded a video for social media and I sent to my manager. I said, hey, I just want to get you to tell me if you dig it or not. I won't post it. It was just this week. And he's like, I like your content. You sound angry. Don't post it. Redo it when you're not angry. And
I've done the same thing with blogs I've written.
Yeah.
I was like, no, I'm way too angry right now.
It was about this question, you know, why are you getting so political? And in the video, I'm saying this, I just want to say to these people, all right, I think what you mean is you feel that I'm getting partisan. I think that's what you mean.
Okay.
So I would say to them, I actually did say this to somebody, I was like, all right, look, do you think murder is wrong? Of course you do. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to have good faith.
Right.
Of course you think they're like, yeah, obviously it's immoral. Do you think we should have a law against it? Mm-hmm. Or do you think that people should be allowed to murder folks?
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, of course we should have a law against it. And I'm like, congratulations, you're being political.
Yeah.
Like, what do you mean?
Right.
How are you going to live without politics? Everybody thinks something is wrong and should have a law against it.
And there should be some kind of policy to fix that. Yeah.
That's being political.
Right.
So I think what you mean is that I'm being partisan. But the crazy thing is that I've never publicly endorsed a candidate. I've never publicly endorsed a party, the Republican Party. I have publicly, criticize both Democrats and Republican Party. Obviously, I'm conservative.
Mm-hmm.
I believe in traditional.
But you're not saying go fight, win, vote for this particular guy, and he will fix our problems.
Exactly. It's insane. I mean, usually what I've said is I think the Republican Party is going to lead us to hell, just not as fast as the Democrat Party. Yep.
It's at 50 instead of 80.
Yeah. What are you going to do? Yep. And they both are idolatrous.
Oh yeah.
But of course, what I think we're in right now, I think politics right now is not even about left and right. It's about people who think that the principles of America are good and are worth preserving, and people who think no, they're not. They're evil, and it's hurting people. And if you dive down to the bottom of the ladder, meaning the ones that think that America's evil, what you will find is that the reason they think America is evil is because they think Christianity is evil.
Mm.
You're always going to find it because the principles of America they do not like derive from the Bible.
Right, right.
And mainly the Old Testament.
And even, you know, we hear a lot about Judeo-Christian, whatever that means, or just Christian values. But I mean, really, I'll just lay out all my cards on the table. My listeners already know where I'm coming from, but it's not just Christian. It's, if you look at the pilgrims who came over, it was Reformed, it was post-millennial, and these days you'd call it theonomic.
Right.
It was, we're rooting everything in the Bible, including our laws. Mm-hmm. It's not slapping the entirety of the Old Testament down and saying, this is our law. It's deriving those principles from laws and living according to that. And oh, holy crap, look at all the blessing that happened because of it.
Yeah, it's some of this is so frustrating because I
hear you, man.
I think that what you're dealing with are a lot of really well-meaning, God-loving brothers and sisters who truly believe they are being more pious by not believing anything you just said.
Right.
I think they're like, that's because you're like an idolatrous America worshiper, and you're wrong.
And there's even in the eschatological debate between the post-mill and the ah-mill guys, of course, like there's going to be in the R2K guys and that kind of thing.
Yeah, the two kingdoms stuff. You know, what's funny to me is I always try to say to people, I'm always clear about what I believe, but I could never, ever win an eschatological argument. I am not a theologian. I could not debate it. I have, of the people who have influenced me, they're on literally every single of these categories, you know?
No, absolutely.
And so I usually tell people, can we try to pretend that we don't have an eschatology for a moment?
For 1 second,
And say this. Do you think it is Christian to stand up against a gross injustice?
You're right.
Everybody says yes.
Right. Yep.
Do you think that even if the world is going to burn and just collapse and the Christians are all going to be martyred for Christ, do you still think that before that happens, do you think we should testify to the world that their works are evil? That's what Jesus said. The world hates me because I testify that its works are evil.
Right.
If we should do those things, third question, do you think that Jesus, let's not say Jesus, let's say the whole Bible. Is it Jesus now? We get into only the red letter thing, which I don't want to do. So let's say the Bible. But do you think God, through his word, has anything to say about what justice would look like?
Yep. Yep.
Every Christian says yes. And so then you're kind of in the, so how are you being too political then to say something? It's insane to me. So what I think you're dealing with are Christians that are well-meaning. They do not, they have not been taught American history at all.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's important because what they have been taught is a different version of American history that says that they've been taught the fiction, the fictionized version, like Foucault's fiction of the past, which says that we never really were a I don't even want to say Christian nation because now you're in the talk. So let's say a Christianized nation.
Yep.
They weren't even really followers of Christ anyway. That was sort of made up.
It's just a social thing.
It was a social. It was this and this.
All of them were deists.
Yeah, all of them were deists. Yeah. And we know that they weren't actually Christian because of slavery. This is what they are getting. And so these Christians who I love, and some of them are my best friends, they believe that if they go back and say the Constitution really actually was rooted in the Bible through in principles of the Bible, I should say, they feel like if they say that, now they have to defend slavery because they haven't been taught.
Right, right.
They haven't understood history, American history, the Constitution, political philosophy.
Given their presuppositions, that makes sense. Just like if you put yourself in the mind of a medieval Catholic, then the Spanish Inquisition makes sense.
Right.
Right. If you think that's going to save them, of course you're going to do that, right?
Yes. Right? I think it's all of that sort of ignorance and naivety all put into one. And what they don't understand, and what I'm trying to wake people up on in the book, what I'm trying to wake them up is to say, and I even say it in the book, I don't care if you're patriotic. I don't care if you have a July 4th parade. It doesn't matter to me at all.
It's not about that.
Yeah, what I'm asking is, if America is destroyed from the ground up, from the inside out, because we're as a suicide of America happening, if that were to happen, do you think you will be more free or less free to preach the gospel? Will you be more free or less free to have a worship service? 2020 showed us what that looks like with one pandemic. You know what I'm saying? Are you going to be more free or less free to raise your kids and teach them there's only two genders? God made you a boy. Right. You are a boy. Are you going to be more free or less free to do that, bro?
And if it crumbles, how do we rebuild?
What's going to replace
what's
it?
What's the foundation? Yeah.
Yeah, and so trying to save America is not trying to be a MAGA Trump follower. It's not trying because I bleed red, white, and blue. It's not that. It's saying, are these principles good? Have they led to liberty?
Mm-hmm.
Can you raise your kids? Can you do your job without the government coming in and saying, no more Westminster effects unless you hire two transgender people or whatever the next progressive thing they want to do.
Right.
It's a big deal.
Right. So I guess last question. Goodness, we've been going for a minute.
It's because I talk too much.
I can too, believe me. But so how do we reach the next generation particularly? I had an epiphany a couple of months ago. My wife and I went to see Lorna Shore, if you're familiar with them at all. Mm-mm. Symphonic deathcore. So super heavy. But there were like 1,500 people at this show in Greenville. So they're like the biggest deathcore band, incredibly technical. I'll show them to you later. but it dawned on me, so much of the music that I've listened to, the heavier stuff, being a millennial, you know, of course, it's going to be mostly guys older than me. And a lot of it is Gen X being angry at the boomers for screwing things up, right?
Okay.
And then you have millennials being angry at the Gen X and the boomers arguing with each other. And now with Lorna Shore, their frontman's like 25, 26. So closer to Gen Z, and they're basically having an existential crisis the whole time.
Yes.
But at the same time, the stage presence was not, I want to see everybody tear this place apart in this pit, like break that guy's leg. Mm-hmm. You know, it was, hey guys, make sure we pick each other up. Like, we want to be able to do this again. And at the end of the show, it wasn't metal horns. He gave heart hands to the crowd, giving the most guttural.
Right.
Like, you know what I mean? It's like, this is the heaviest crap possible.
Yes.
It's existential crisis, and I'm giving heart hands. Like, there's something there.
Yes.
How do we reach them?
Man, what you're saying actually is...
Like, are you seeing that too?
I know exactly what you mean. Yeah, I think that it's like a, it might sound trite, but it's not. It's actually a really, really important cultural analysis because they're heavy. That's not what heavy bands are supposed to do.
Right.
That is like not rock and roll, but it's becoming rock and roll, right?
Right. It's becoming counterculture.
Yes. And I would say that's just in the same way that the rock, the rock industry shunned me as enemy number one for saying that we wouldn't play concerts that were that forced you to get vaccines.
Right.
And now you've got other bands on there saying that I'm the evil one and because I'm being anti the system.
Right.
You know, it's like my mind is blown. You know what I mean? So
what about all those anti-Reagan bands in the 80s?
Exactly. I mean, this is the crazy thing. Here's what we need, in my opinion. Here's what Christian families have got to do. One of the things, I mess up a lot of things with my kids. You know, my kids are awesome. My kids love God. They're saved, and they're really wonderful. But
and I met your son last year at Winter Jam. Right. Yeah.
My kids are, bless the Lord, in his providence, my kids are amazing.
Mm.
Really are.
Yeah.
I did a lot of dumb stuff. I did a few good things. And one of the good things I think I did was I would explain to my kids the law of God, and then I would explain to them why it matters. And the reason being, I grew up in a household that was just like, you don't do that. You don't grow your hair long.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Because I said so.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yep. And I would be like, is there not a better reason than that? You know, or the Bible says, I'd be like, oh, so
it, you got a little lawyer in you, don't you?
Yeah, maybe so.
I know I can do that. Yeah.
It's like, there's not a better reason than the Bible says. I mean, as a kid, you're sort of like, okay. I mean, I don't know. What I found is that the Bible, God is not arbitrary.
Right.
His laws aren't arbitrary. He's not just like, it's not like with your parents. So when you're a parent, your kid says, hey, they want to spend the night at my cousin's house, whatever. You might just have a feeling like, I'm just not in the mood for that. You're like, no, why? Because I said so.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little bit arbitrary. You're just mm-hmm. not in the mood.
Right.
God's not like that. Yeah. He has reasons. And so I remember explaining to my children, my daughter, I remember saying to her, you don't argue with your mom, you know? And here's why. It's not natural. It's not a natural thing to do.
Mm.
She's in charge. And I remember explaining to her, I said, I want you to imagine that you came in from playing with a friend. You came in the house and at our table was a dog and a cat sitting at the table drinking tea. Because my daughter used to like having like tea parties.
Yep.
You know,
yep.
Little princess tea parties.
Yep.
With her little girl, you know, girlfriends. And I would say, imagine a dog sitting at the table with a little teacup, you know, and she's laughing because I'm imitating it. And you would be like, this doesn't make any sense at all. It's completely unnatural. Dogs don't sit in chairs and drink tea. And my daughter's laughing really much, you know. Mm. And I would say, that's what it's like when you talk back to your mom. It's completely unnatural. That's not the way that God made the world to work. Everybody has a place in order where they're supposed to be. And my kids remember those conversations.
Right.
Because they're not just like, because I said, because God said.
Effectively explaining the gift of God's goodness in those kind of things.
Absolutely. That's exactly right.
Yeah.
It's the same. I actually wrote this in the book. It's the same thing. Like I said to my kids, as you know, we're having the talk as they got older.
Yep.
I'm like, oh, you got to imagine this. Imagine that God said, imagine that God created the world in such a way that the only way to procreate was within same-sex sex.
Mm-hmm.
Two men have sex together and they create a baby. Two women have sex together, they create a baby. Imagine that's the way that God made the world, and then he gives us a command that sex is meant to only be between a man and a woman in a covenant relationship. Well, what that would mean was that God created his world to work a certain way, and then he gave you a law that works against the good world he created. That would be bizarre. So now, in order to please God, things go bad for my life.
Right.
But that's not what happens. He created a moral universe, and he gave us a moral law. And when you obey God's law, you are in the flow of the good world God created, right? Flow of the kingdom is what there's an author, E. Stanley Jones, that I quoted. He calls it being in the flow of the kingdom. Actually, he says the name of his book, which is fantastic, was called The Unshakable Kingdom and the Unchanging Person.
Mm.
And it was probably written in the 80s or something. I don't remember when. So those kind of conversations, I know it's a really long answer. I want to encourage people, especially if they have kids, you've got to begin to teach your kids that Christ is Lord of all of life, politics, parenting, used the word theonomy earlier. That's a good way to say it. But God is the Lord of everything. And so he has something to say about it.
About all of it.
So that when your kids go to college, because right now what happens is we raise Christian kids, they go to college, and then the secular progressives take the kids away from Christianity.
Yep.
Because they show them all these quote-unquote good ideas, and the Christian kids are not, they're not ready to say that's not right and it doesn't work. And we can do that with everything, explaining why the law of God works, why his world is good. You know?
Love it. So where can, you got a show to get ready for. Where can people find you? Socials, website.
Sure.
Remind them of your book title, all that good stuff.
All right. So the only place you can get the physical copy of the book is my website, johnlcooper.com. Reason being is that a lot of people don't know with publishers, if I go and publish a book and I want to, criticize another theologian, or I say another, as if I'm a theologian, but some theologian.
According to Sproul, everyone's a theologian.
So. That's true. Yeah. He did say that. So there you go. So yeah. So well, there you go. It's a good example. If I want to say, I think that Sproul was wrong about this, which
on
baptism, I don't say.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes. But if I were to do that, and that same publishing company does Sproul stuff, they would say you can't do that. So what you end up with is people putting out sometimes, I think, really unbiblical ideas, and they're never challenged because they're not allowed to.
Right.
You know, and so I was like, that's it. I'm doing my own book. So go to johnlcooper.com, get the book there, and then I'm also John L. Cooper on my various Instagram, Facebook, and then my podcast, Cooper Stuff Podcast. You can get that wherever. Yep.
And final question, which you often reference in the Cooper Stuff Podcast, is how many poops do you give?
We give zero poops for woke cookies, for wokeness in general.
Yes,
you
sir.
You know what I'm saying?
Yes, sir.
Zero poops for pleasing man.
So, johnlcooper.com. Thanks for listening to the Westminster Effects Doxology Podcast. Go love God, love your neighbor, and make some music, and also go listen to some Skillet.
Woo!
We'll see you next time.